jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the post-round one, pre-round two, two-month break coronavirus podcast. My name's Marcus. Welcome back to the Supercoach Coach podcast, and I'm joined again by FB Donkey. Welcome back, stranger.
Thanks, mate. It's good to chat to you. I wasn't sure that we'd get back this year at all, I guess. So keen to be back in what is, I guess, essentially a pretty good time frame.
Yeah, just hope we keep up our good coronavirus numbers and we move closer and closer to normal. And hopefully, by the time we get to the grand final, Mark, we'll be sitting in the stadiums. And because of coronavirus, any team could get there. So who knows? It might even be Geelong and Essendon. And I wouldn't have said that at the start of the year. So anything can happen in 2020.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said that about Geelong either, mate. do you reckon we'll still
haven't changed.
Do you reckon we'll still have the lockdown beard going by grand final time? Or are they going to go?
Yeah, I hope it goes by then. I mean, I have a feeling that if things are still hanging on by then, we will have had a second wave and, yeah, likely we won't be in the stadium. So hopefully things go well. We don't have the second wave and we will be back. It will be interesting to see how things pan out across the globe. But you're not here for coronavirus content. You're here for coronavirus Supercoach content. So we'll try and stick to that. And boy, Mark, do we have a lot of content to go through. And we were having a bit of a chat about this before getting on to record. And I was sort of saying that, as veteran super coaches, I don't know about you, but for me, this is actually pretty exciting. Part of the fun of super coach is that you get to have your opinions, have a position, throw it all in the mix. Everybody's in the dark, and then you watch things play out and hopefully look like a genius. And when the factors become more and more consistent year to year, things get more well understood, the content and the quality of communities get stronger. The edge we got, Mark, has decreased over time. But this year, oh, everything's out the window. It's a brand new rule book. It's an opportunity for us to shine, I would have thought.
Possibly. I think that the shortened season kind of affects that a little bit because it becomes a bit of a crapshoot. I think with all these extra trades, shortened game, shortened season, there's probably going to be greater luck come into it. And I think
that's a good caveat. If things go badly, it's bad luck. But if things go as well, we were fucking geniuses, let me tell you.
We've always liked things to change because those adjustment periods are when you have the biggest edge. It's like I play a lot of poker. A lot of people are really, really good at poker. And so we change the games. We change the rules to make people start again. And that's where sort of the people that really think deeply about the game have an edge.
Awesome. So for this week's show, Mark, we're actually going to spend a fair bit more time talking about high-level strategy. So I've got quite a few topics here that we're going to run through and actually in a time box format. So we're going to try something new. Each topic will give us 3 minutes between the two of us. We'll sort of see how we go as we're going through it. If there's anything really juicy, we might make the call. You don't have to stop when the buzzer is up, but you should wrap up your point and then we'll move on to the next thing. And if we get any more questions on any specific topics, we can obviously go into more depth in the future episode. So a bit of a view on what we'll be chatting about, obviously do a bit of a review from round one, talk about the new rules now that we're returning. So we've got five trades now. Talk about some new strategies facing into 2020 now that some of the dust has settled and we have to decide on our teams before a lockout in a bit over a week. Talk about corrections. Talk about the job security of rookies. Talk about trades that help us move toward high value targets. Talk about trades that help us change the structure of our teams. Talk about the new fixture. Talk about the fact that we've had some players just not be around for 2 months and what that might mean to training. Talk about what it means that some teams are going up into a hub. So many new topics, Mark, and I'm actually pretty interested to have a bit of a yarn about some of these things. So you're not going to get very targeted advice in terms of, hey, this is what we think you should do. But to be fair, it's because we think everybody's having a red hot crack and guess at that. But to an extent, your guess is just about as good as ours. So what we're going to try and do for this first show back is give you a little bit of a framework in terms of, hey, these are the factors that are a bit unique to this season. Well, not a bit, very unique to this season. Here are the things that have changed. And this is how it's influenced our framework for considering Supercoach strategy, trades, and so on. And hopefully that's a good starting point for you to sort of reshift how you approach your Supercoach team. So as per usual, we are the Strategy Supercoach podcast. We're unabashed about that, Mark, and we'll be spending most of this week's show probably more at that high-level strategy conversation. And I know we both love it, so I'm pretty ready to get into it.
I think you just had your 3 minutes, mate.
Yeah. That time limit's going to be tough. Being concise is a challenge for me at times. So you'll have to keep me honest there, Mark. I'll get the time. The stopwatch is on my end, so it's a bit blind for you. I don't know if we've got a good way of sharing that. So that's not well thought out, but we'll see how we go. We'll start off with a bit of a review, and then after that, we'll go to the time box format. So, Mark, why don't we start off with just how was round one for you 8 weeks ago now? We've had some time for the dust to settle. Any bad blood with some underperforming players? Hopefully the nerves has been kicked. How'd you go in round one, Mark? Are you happy with your starting team? And how much do you have to rip it up looking at this trade period?
Everything went really well, I think, except probably two errors. One was not having Grundy, and it wasn't so much not having Grundy because Nick Nat did all right. It was just not having Grundy as captaincy option. And I think that really put me behind a little bit. So I finished on 29,008 as my rank, which realistically that's a decent start, anywhere in the top 100,000 mm-hmm. realistically week one, because sort of anything can happen week two. So pretty happy with a bunch of stuff like Jack Viney, 186. Last minute change.
That was a very good buy for you, mate. Viney, and I'm sure he will come up a lot over this next week and a half. A prime target to be traded in.
And the other one that I was super strong on was Naismith with 121. That was fun to watch. And yeah, really, that helped to nail things a little bit. But yeah, Hickey playing, I probably should have pulled out a Nick Nat at that point. And my midfield just sucked. Like Cripps, Kelly, Danger, Bont, out of the four of them, 112 was the highest, and I had two under 100 out of them. So that really cost me.
It's been a bit of time, Mark. So I don't think you remember how unique I think your team ended up being relative to the average cookie cutter team. So would you like to elaborate a little bit on some of the decisions that you came to? I think you saw this season as an opportunity to throw out the rule book a little bit and be a bit more aggressive with some of your starting strategies.
Yeah, I did do that. I kind of thought we might have a one-round season, so I thought I'll just play for one round and see how I go. And I definitely allowed me to take a few more risks. Like I have Jaden Short in my team somehow, in my back line. I knew Hooley was going to be out, and he got 86, which is okay. I don't have any of the Fife, Neil type players in my team. Almost ended up with McGrath in my midfield and kind of wish I had of. I have Danger and Bont, who, yeah, just didn't work out great. Nick Nat and Naismith in the rucks. My forward line is Whitfield, Martin, Segler, Brayshaw, Smith, then rookies. So the Brayshaw one didn't work out and still not totally sure on Whitfield. Sort of came back to him at the last minute. But, yeah, Segler came in for Petrarca sort of late once I saw how well the rucks were scoring. And, yeah, there's a few differences in there, mate. I don't mind starting off a little bit different. How about you go?
I went pretty well, I think. Probably one of my better starts in quite a few seasons now, so I'm happy with that. Having said that, I mean, ranking-wise, I was only at the 15K mark, so not amazing, but with a score of 2190 and really more just the starting picks, as we well know, as veterans, the first round doesn't mean a heap. What you're really looking at is your structure, any missed picks, any duds. And I was reasonably happy with the team from that point of view. Probably Dylan Roberton and Tom Lynch are the ones that I'm sort of most questioning. Tom Lynch was
stoked
definitely
to miss Roberton.
Yep. Tom Lynch was definitely a bit of a risk, but he was playing Carlton. And I was a bit hopeful he might get away with a big first game. That hasn't panned out too well, but fortunately he's cheap, so we'll move him around. But certainly things they were happy about. We were very hot on the Naismith bandwagon, and so Grundy Naismith, I think, by far was sort of the right ruck combo. And as a community, we know how much we like nailing the rucks, Mark. So we're very, very happy with that, especially because Max Gawn had a poor first round. We'll talk about what the new fixture brings for Max Gawn over the next four rounds because things might change. But it was the right choice at the time, I think. One pick that I'm actually really, really happy with is John Segler. I think the rucks shown really good scoring in the first round with the reduced minutes, and Segler with the forward ruck flexibility with 101. He's one of my favorite picks. Dangerfield has definitely caused some concerns on debut, but with the draw that's come up over the next 4 weeks with Geelong, he's all of a sudden a player I'm much happier about. So overall, can't complain. And actually, I think a really good baseline to tackle this next period with. So with that, Mark, I don't think we'll do a community recap yet. Let's just get into the guts of the show. And we'll start with our first topic, which is around the new rules. So I'm going to kick off our timer after I explain them. But basically, you've got five trades this round, and that counts against your total 30. Really, outside of that, not a huge amount is changing. So all it really means is that you can trade aggressively a little bit earlier, but with the amount of rounds that we have and the fact that we still have 30 trades, we don't have any buys. If you turbo trade from now until you run out of trades, you would only have round 15 with a single trade and round 16 and 17 with no trades at all. So you can max trade now until round 15 and you're only left with two rounds without any trades left. Just for some context, there's a lot of opportunity to be very aggressive with these five trades this year. And I think we should look at it as a bit of an opportunity. So, Mark, I'm going to kick off the 3 minutes. What do you think about the new rules, mate?
Well, everyone that I've been speaking to so far is committed to just using all five trades straight up. And I think it's because of the reasons that you explained, that the shorter season means 25 trades for the rest of the year is plenty, especially considering you may not, like if you get your five trades right, you hopefully wouldn't have to use one any before round three. So you'd have that week off, which would sort of give you an extra round later in the season of having trades. And with prices moving that little bit quicker, I think that we'll want to sort of move our team around a little bit more, maybe a little bit earlier. So, yeah, I'm looking to max trade. I think that my early position is that I probably want to do two trades around the premium mid prices. And I think that I think I nailed the rookies pretty close to round one. But I think I expect there to be a pretty significant change around rookies just because there's been so much time in between and players coming back from injury that I think I probably have to focus three of those trades onto the rookies. And that's without knowing any idea which of those rookies I will need to be focusing on. What about you?
Yeah, that's a good call, Mark. Probably one of the main considerations for having an 8-week gap between the first and second round is the fact that rookies all of a sudden go completely out the window. You would assume that most clubs will reset based on how the players have come back from a 2-month layout being completely unmonitored. You would assume they're going to be guys who attacked that period with a lot more dedication than others who potentially, you know, maybe need to look after their mental health with a cheeseburger here and there. Who knows? Yeah, right? Yeah, Mark sent me a photo this morning. I can't believe I'm using my 3 minutes for this. Mark sent me a photo this morning of him and his family out riding a bike, and my photo back was of me with a double chin on the couch. So, yeah, I know how that feels. And I think there'll be a few football players that will take a little bit of coming back and hitting it back with speed. So in terms of how we approach the new rules, I think sort of what you articulated was definitely correct. Rookies is what you prioritize, corrections, and as per usual, what that leaves you with is looking out for what will give you the best bang for your buck. And that's probably where we're going to tie a little bit into sort of the new strategy for 2020. And I'd like to draw parallels to sort of Dream Team or AFL Fantasy and the way they run their comp, where you get two trades every single week.
As soon as you've raised that, I just wanted to say I'm 170th in AFL Fantasy. You raised it.
Wow. Okay. Well, maybe you should be giving them advice around the new strategy then, Mark. But certainly the new rules, do not be afraid of using the five trades. Our time is up there, and good segue anyway, because we wanted to talk about this new strategy. So let's get into that, Mark. And really, this is a reflection of, and I don't know how much time, can't remember how much time we spent on this in the preseason, but it's a reflection of the fact that really, now that we only have 17 rounds, you have five less rounds with a completed team. So the prior strategy was complete your team, and then with your completed team, you would bang out huge amounts of points at the end game, and that would take you through to the finish. Now, without that appreciation of the last 5 weeks, the concentration in terms of how quickly and how much you score really becomes about how quickly you upgrade, because you're not really going to get the full appreciation of getting a completely matured team. So what does that mean for sort of your day-to-day decisions? A player who's averaging 5 points less but that you can bring in now is going to be worth more than waiting an extra week for a player that can average 5 points more, but you can't net the points this week. Not only that, I think sort of the impetus that it puts in terms of keeping trades for injuries all of a sudden changes. Last year, the buys ended in round 15. Now, imagine when the buys ended, you only had round 16 and 17. Would you worry too much about keeping trades for those last two rounds? You might only keep one or for an emergency, or if you really cared about Supercoach finals or Supercoach leagues, you might keep a few. But certainly going for the overall, faced with that, you'd almost be fairly happy to use 30 trades sort of in a row as aggressively and as quickly as you can. As per usual, trades are worth more at the start of a season when you have more rounds for them to deliver the benefits. Yeah, I just think this year, our approach to Supercoach is so, so, so different. We didn't talk about it a lot when picking starting teams, but it's certainly time. Yeah, it's a huge factor, though, when you consider upgrading. It's huge in changing a strategy. What do you think, Mark?
Well, really interesting points that you raised there. I think that what I really took out of it was that the first five rounds of the season are now way more important than they have been in the past, because they're a higher proportion of the season. And what I mean by that is not just for cash generation, but also for points. So getting those points on the board early is going to be more important than it was in the past, which probably, I mean, in my head, because I love mid-prices, it makes me just want to fill my team with mid-prices and just get those points on the board. So cash generation mid-prices.
Well, that was some of the reason why you went with Nick Nat over Grundy, right? I mean, part of it was the fact that the changing in point scoring might benefit, you know, lower time on ground might benefit Nat Nui. But one part of it was he's a mid-pricer and presents a lot more value than Grundy, right?
Yeah, I just didn't realize that all my midfielders were going to be so terrible and not score a captain score between them. That was the total flaw of my strategy there. I do think that you're right. You're just going to have to just be super, super aggressive this season and just get as many of those points early as possible.
So before we get into corrections, I think just want to expand on that a little bit. In terms of what that means for your trading over the next 4 to 5 weeks, normally when we get into trading in round one and round two, we go, don't waste your trades because you'll need your trades for injuries in the back end. Today, what you're really looking at is how do I set my team up as well so that once round two and round three hits, once the price changes start going, I start making cash as quickly as possible. So in the past, we'd look at a play like Jack Varney and go, well, if you didn't pick him at a start, you missed the 186. If you don't think he's a 115 candidate, don't think about him at all. Well, that changes a little bit because now if you bring in Jack Varney, you might not keep him for the whole season. You're not committed to that. All you're committed to is points generation and cash generation quickly. And you know what Jack Viney has? He has a bloody 186 sitting and waiting for his price increases. And not just that, we haven't talked about this rule change yet, which is actually really relevant. Price changes after only two rounds this year, which means that compared to prior seasons, from now until, let's say, round eight, you are between 15 and 35K, you know, going off an average of about a 70 from a player, ahead in terms of cash generation compared to the prior season. Why? Because prices increase 1 week ahead, so you get that bonus, and then it's a compounding effect. What I mean to say, Mark, really, is just that, you know, we're really looking to bring in players now, potentially even as stepladder selections, which we really wouldn't have looked much sort of at that in the past.
That's my favorite strategy. I love that strategy. I love stepladder players. That's like my thing. That's what makes this game fun. I like the rules being changed to favor that sort of situation. And I think that I'm not sure that if I didn't have Viney, I'd definitely be bringing him in. I really, really like the selection preseason. I think that if he's not going to be premium, he's not an obvious selection because he will need to have a good next 2 or 3 weeks. But the advantage is that his price goes up after 2 weeks. So instead of only counting for one price movement, it counts for two.
We'll leave that on hold for now, and let's go to corrections. I think sort of good tie in there from the previous topic. So in terms of looking at corrections, Mark, are there any corrections that are sort of screaming out from your team? Where would you start in terms of correcting your team?
Okay, so there's two sides of a correction. There's a player that you want to get rid of, and there's a player that you want to get in. And I guess that the Grundy factor is just drawing for me. That's not correcting Nick Nat, because actually I think if he plays without Hickey, and Hickey may have only been in the side because they were playing against Melbourne and Gorn. So I think that Nick Nat could still be a good pick. It's just the Grundy, so that's the in more than the out that's sort of tempting me there. I have Angus Brayshaw, who we found out sort of after round one that he was probably playing with an injury in round one, which may have limited his time. Is he then going to come up and live up to expectations now that he's had a few extra months to get fit? Or is that 66 indicative of something that's likely to keep going? So he's a bit of a hot point for my team. And the other one that we were really hot on in the preseason, Marcus, is Bontempelli, and whether he, facing a couple of taggers maybe in the first 3 weeks now with a restructured fixture, whether he might be someone that needs to go out. And then looking for those players that are not in my team that are just screaming out that they need to come in.
Something that we have discussed in the pre-show, Mark, but we've decided to push out into the next episode, which makes some of this discussion a bit tougher, is there is changes to Supercoach scoring, right? Absolutely, a reduction of minutes has changed up how Supercoach is scored. We're going to leave that for a separate episode and look at players in a more specific way when discussing that. So we won't go into that with too much depth, just sort of as a caveat. In relation to corrections, though, the things that I'm certainly really looking for is, where have I spent money in my team in an inopportune way? That for me is going to be quite a guiding light. So Dylan Roberton, for example, 260,000. Now, if you don't think he's going to outscore a rookie, that's potentially 130,000 that's wasted sitting in Dylan Roberton that you could downgrade, cash in on, and pick up a rookie that's going to go up faster in price, bank that 130 for an upgrade elsewhere, or shift your team around. One of the big elements for corrections, and as it relates to this new strategy and stuff that we're talking about, is where have I wasted money that I can reapply it? Another example of a player who falls into that is that Bontempelli bucket, right? So can I look at Bontempelli? Can I look at Viney? Do I expect Viney to be able to mimic something similar to Bontempelli, or at least offer enough cash generation that I'd be willing to jump off that drop off in scoring, and so that I can cash that in and use Viney as a stepladder player for value, and use those funds to structure up slightly differently. So that's certainly one element that I'm going to be very, very heavily focused on. Corrections based on team value that has been poorly spent. And so similarly, you know, if you missed out on a Devin Smith, he scored 105, he's 335K, you probably should have started with him, but, you know, that's pretty obvious value that you cannot afford to leave on the table this year. All right, Mark, the 3 minutes is up, so let's go on to rookies now. So would like to talk about what you think the implications are from a job security point of view, what challenges you're expecting to have to sort of navigate, and if there are any players that are front of mind that you're worried about. I'll start by throwing Tom Green in there because I hear Haitley and others are going past him, and he only scored 41 and he cost 167,000. He's one that I'm a bit sketchy about.
Yeah, there's probably a bunch that you could throw into that basket that even potentially ones that performed well in round one that, as you've suggested earlier in the show, that people have just gone past them based on how they've handled the last couple of months. And almost all of these rookies were sort of fringe players in their team anyway, or might have been in there to cover injuries. So like Brandon Zerk-Thatcher is a really good example. Only scored 49 round one, which isn't great for 189,000, especially considering a lot of the Bombers defenders scored all right in that game. We've got Hooker and Ambrose coming back into that team. So can he survive those players coming in? Like, they would almost have to play in different positions for him to survive that, which may end up happening. It's just there's a lot of unknowns there, and that is a lot of money, a bit like Tom Green, to have tied up in a rookie who's not even going to be playing. And then what are the rookies that are actually going to be coming in? And we're going to be, because we don't have a preseason games to watch and really watch them build up their form, I think we're going to have to operate off pretty limited information here and just have to make some guesses about based purely on selection. And what I would suggest would be whatever your plans are going into the round two, that you should have potentially two or three trades lined up for rookies, and you should be really flexible in which ones it's going to be, and just adjust as team sheets are announced. You're just not going to have any other choice. Like, I don't know, it's a bit like round one with those rookies sort of changes coming in late, but now we're actually burning trades for them and we're just going to have flexible approaches to trading that week. It'd be great 2 weeks out to have, these are my exact five trades, but I just don't think we're going to be in a position to lock them in like that.
And especially because the journos too, they've not had the same amount of time. Some of them were let off or furloughed for a little bit. We don't have the same amount of information about how the players are going. that certainly feels like a bit of a vacuum, especially in the context of job security of rookies at the moment. So what I would also advise people to think about is when you're looking at rookies, make sure that you trade in a rookie that is on the bubble, so they have played their first game. One of the advantages to price changes after only two rounds is that as long as a player's playing a second game, even if they get dropped for the third, at least they'll go up in price. So this is fairly similar to AFL fantasy sort of strategy that, you know, each of your trades is, you want to try and minimize the risk and get something out of it today, because you've got trades every single week. So it's really about optimizing the trades each week, not just like over the course of the season. So make sure, if you can, trade to a player who's playing their second game rather than somebody who's playing their first. And I know I've gone over time, but probably the other one to think about is less relevant to rookies, but also we don't necessarily what it's going to look like after sort of 4 weeks. We have no idea if there'll be another gap or whatever else. So even though you kind of have to assume best case scenario, at the same time, I think you do want to do your analysis in blocks. So when you analyze the job security of rookies, I mean, I would look very specifically over the next 4 weeks. If you are relatively confident that over the longer term, they're not going to have a spot, but in the next 4 weeks, you're pretty confident that they'll have a spot, that probably is going to be good enough for the interim, because we can't predict what will happen in another 2 months. So that'd be the other piece, because fixture-wise as well, we don't really know what's going to happen beyond these 4 weeks, but we know the fixture for the next four.
Two players I just want to quickly throw out there are Isaac Rankin and Harley Bunnell as two players that may potentially get named round two that weren't in the mix round one. And they're going to be really interesting tests for coaches.
For that rule, yeah. That's true. All right. Let's get on to the next topic. This one is on good value trades. So really talking about that optimizing of those five trades in terms of posturing your team for fast cash generation quickly. The faster you complete your team, the faster you have a full premium team. If you are one upgrade ahead, if you can somehow manufacture a situation where you end up with extra cash generation, you stay that one or half upgrade ahead. Is super crucial this year, because anybody who's behind doesn't have time to catch up with the perfect team. Because when they finish their team, they'll only have 2 weeks to compete against yours. So it's such a huge, huge part of the game. I cannot emphasize it enough. It is a huge change to the strategy of this game. How do you think that affects how you approach these five trades, Mark? And in fact, how aggressive you are about these five trades? Because previously, I mean, it'd be pretty nuts to recommend using five trades. If there's nothing wrong with your team, if all these rookies end up playing, why would you? But this year, I think it's almost like trying to seek out the opportunities to do better. How do you think you'll approach that, Mark? And in fact, the number of trades that you'll use.
Yeah, quite interesting, because I think that I would have been pretty happy to go into round two without making any trades. I would have just, like, my team's okay. I would have been happy to back it in for another round. But now, with the opportunity to use these extra trades, I think I'm gonna take that and use this as an opportunity to reevaluate my team. I guess that the thing that stands out for me based on the discussion is really not wanting to miss those really key super value players like a Devin Smith if you don't have him. Maybe Segler's in that category. For me, I know we don't want to get into specifics of players, but if Darcy Fort has that Geelong ruck position locked up, he would be very, very high on my radar as someone to come in. So, yeah, just missing those players that could potentially be premiums for a lot less and get those points on the board that's probably going to be my main focus.
Now, one thing that we probably haven't discussed a heap is around sort of, do you purposefully trade down from 5 to 0? Do you, you know, even if you can't find something that looks right, do you try to anyway? I'm a bit skeptical about trading for trading's sake.
When do we get to make 5 trades, mate? I am going gung-ho. This might be a one-off opportunity to actually do this and enjoy it. So, yeah, I'm going to just go for gold, mate. Go for glory, go hard, or go home. So I think that most teams would find some opportunities to trade. And I guess if the rookies all play that are in my team already, then that may change my thinking a little bit, and I may end up holding back on one or two of them. Other than that, I'll be going pretty hard, I think.
All right, next topic. And now we're talking about changes to team structure, Mark. So 3 minutes on the clock. Now, structure-wise, I think one thing that we are both sort of fairly aligned on is Naismith obviously sitting in the R2 spot, and certainly Naismith is certainly a big target. Gawn to Naismith is one of the most touted trades at the moment, especially after Gawn had a quieter round one against, as you mentioned, Mark, both Hickey and Nat Nui. So one of the toughest ruck oppositions you can come up with. I'm guessing you agree with me on Naismith, Mark. Is there anything else structure-wise that sort of you'd be really trying to push people toward, or you're trying to push yourself toward or your team toward?
I think that you start getting into the topic that you raised earlier, which is the changes in scoring potentially. And I really hate the fact that we have to make so many decisions based on one round of data, because we've been proven time and time again in the past that one round of data can be very, very misleading, even if you think it's you're seeing patterns. So even if it's not just like, oh, Jack Viney scored 186, he's going to average 120 for the year. Like, it's more just like, even if there's a set of data that says all the rucks are going to score great, well, Gawn didn't, and maybe they won't. Like, we are making a lot of conclusions off very small sample set, but yeah, it's those players like Naismith looked fantastic. I absolutely loved watching him play. Coming into round one, he was the one that I was really sweating because we'd pushed so hard on him as an option, and he just looked great.
I think something that's pretty interesting about sort of the changes in scoring is that when you have less time in the season, 5 less rounds in the season, the amount that the first 5 rounds sort of accounts for in the total scheme of the year is a whole lot more, right? And it's a fairly similar principle when you reduce time in a match. All of a sudden, what you do in 60 minutes gets extrapolated forward and means a whole bunch more, which means that variance increases a heck of a lot more. And that's a very scary prospect for super coaches, because oftentimes you're making strategic decisions off longer term sort of expectations, and then you're pairing that back to sort of what you might expect to happen over the next few rounds. And you're right, Mark, the tendency would be to make a lot of these assumptions, and some of them will certainly pan out to be true, but some of them may be sort of misleading, false reds that you don't want to be charging at. So certainly interesting, and I'd say probably from a changing of a structure point of view, probably the only other thing that I'd be looking toward is, in general, a lot of people went with a bit of a deeper back bench, and that wasn't necessarily because the rookies were all there, but because heading into the end of the preseason, the rookies were kind of there. So a lot of people had structures already in that way. And so when the rookies went away, you still ended up with Nobles and Zirk Thatchers and Branders and Starchevics sort of taking up those spots. But a lot of them didn't score very well. Meanwhile, in the forward line, you had Taylor and Georgiadis both scoring above 78. So I think that's one where there's a bit of opportunity. I think that some of the forward rookies compared to the back rookies might look all right, Mark.
I think the other thing that I just want to focus on is durability. So if you have a player that misses 4 weeks, all of a sudden that's a quarter of the season. If you have your upgrade, what do you call it? Upgrade.
Cadence. You cannot afford that this year, 100%.
Yeah, it's more important. So I think that you really, really want to be heading down the durability path. And that's unpredictable, but it's predictable to a level.
Yep, 100%. The injury history piece is huge. All right, let's go to a quick chat about the new fixtures with 3 minutes on the clock now, Mark. So probably the first one that we just want to call out. I'm a Geelong supporter. I'm clearly very biased, but it's been pretty obvious to everyone. Geelong gets Melbourne, Gold Coast and Carlton all at home at Skilled Stadium. A lot of people are looking at Paddy Dangerfield, but certainly this fixture has some very interesting impacts. You've got the hub sort of off in the corner there as well. Apart from Geelong and Patrick Dangerfield, which have been sort of touted a lot in the Supercoach community, Mark, is there anything else that you're looking at from fixture point of view?
To be honest, I haven't looked extremely closely at it, mate. I've been sort of looking at what happens with the Bombers, and that's about it.
Do you think you'll pay attention to the fixture and strength of schedule more this year than in previous years, considering shortened season and sort of the imperative for this upgrade period to work out really well?
I think that it's potentially less impact because everyone plays each other once, right? So, like, there's not this, like, double dipping on the Gold Coast or double dipping on some weak teams. It's just probably that home ground stuff that you mentioned there. And I guess because it's dynamic and changing and we don't actually know what's happening after a four-week period, I probably, looking at that first four-week period is something that's probably useful, but I don't pay a lot of attention to fixture as it is.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I think we have toned down a lot on in recent times. What I'd say around new fixturing is that probably one element that isn't as well discussed is it's pretty hard to tell which teams are going to come out of coronavirus doing well or not. And I think it's pretty naive to assume that, like, all teams have 2 months away from training with each other and all of a sudden they come back and they're all playing at the exact same level as a team as they were prior. Surely there'll be some teams that, like, we expected them to go great guns and all of a sudden when they come back, they look like a schmozzle. And then there might be other teams that, you know, they start off being a basket case. Maybe Gold Coast train super hard over this break because they need to. And they come back looking like a bag of roses. So that's another thing just to sort of keep in mind with fixture is that anticipating strength of schedule and how strong opponents are in this climate is also potentially a little bit challenging.
Yeah, I'm not sure that roses come in bags, but I think that the fixture will act or the game's length will actually really advantage some teams over other teams. And obviously my hope is that the Bombers are one of them because it does make sense that we're a faster playing team and it would benefit a team like that. So I do think that some teams will not be as good under shorter quarters.
All right, let's go to the next topic now. And this one's really talking about the fact that, these players have been away for a good period of time and they're all coming back together and they only have 3 weeks to train together before they have to start playing games. This one's pretty tough to sort of speculate on, Mark. So I don't really have any specific ideas in mind, but was there anything you were thinking about in terms of players returning from this 8 weeks off and how you might approach how you select some of these players? You know, Pendlebury, for example, he clearly made pretty good use of his time. I don't know if you've seen his guns doing the rounds on Twitter, but he's jacked AF.
Yeah, okay. I don't know. I think that the main difference is going to be how teams are benefited from players coming back from injury. Mm. And that's just could completely change some teams. Like, the Giants only having to play one game without Callum Ward is going to be a huge advantage to them potentially. And the Bombers have got a few coming back, a few still not going to be back. But, like, I mean, Essendon would be 8 weeks into a season and not have had their captain play. And for him to be coming back early is a big deal. So I think that that will affect that there's probably less likely to be carrying injuries. So rookies may end up with less places on the teams because there's less players that have just gone through a big preseason. And I guess that injury lists in general should be smaller. With shorter games, injury lists should be smaller.
Any thoughts around fitness, Mark, and you know, runners? Like, do you look at a Gaff type and go, I know you can run all day. And even if you came back off a shorter preseason, if anything, that might advantage you over the shitter runners. I might look at you. You know, do we look for guys who have a bit more fitness? Do we bother with those sorts of speculations?
Shouldn't fitness play less of a role because they're playing shorter quarters?
It should lessen the impact, but if 2 months of not training and having no physical contact, having no preseason games, and then coming back to games, like, you know, the shorter quarters, I would guess, is not going to offset the fact that you've just not had games for 8 weeks and you're training by yourself.
Yeah, and I guess that realistically that could lead to extra injuries, like impact injuries, because players do actually get hardened bodies from just whacking into each other for 3 months over the summer.
ACL rates are higher at the start of the season, right? Because the supporting muscles and stuff, and the players haven't had the same amount of time to develop that. You know, it's something they talk about when AFLW a little bit more compared to sort of slightly more athletes that have a longer time to or more training to bed some of that sort of stuff down. That wraps up all the different topics that we talked about there, Mark. And most notably, we didn't really talk about changes in scoring. So pretty keen to get chatting with you. It's a bit tough to plan with coronavirus, so we're not definitely committing to do another show together, but we'll definitely do another show with at some stage, whether it's with Dunny or Bryce or whoever else. But we certainly need to talk about changes in scoring, you know, the ruck patterns, the contested beats like Viney sort of kicking butt. Is there anything else that you'd like to shout out to our users in terms of things that you're thinking about or any general advice as they navigate this week and a half of, I guess it's kind of feels like a pre-lockout again. We get to rejig our teams.
Oh, Jesus, lockout's bloody stressful the first time. I don't need two of them in a year. I think that the thing that probably strikes me a little bit is that five trades allows us to be a little bit reckless based off a really limited data set, which is both only one round of actual playing and not having the normal build-up of a preseason, which means I think that there's going to be a lot of regretted trades in the next couple of weeks, and I'm not sure that there's a lot that you can do about that. You're just going to be guessing based on the information that you know, and the information that you know may be misleading.
Any tips that you might give? Look, what do you use to guard against that sort of risk, Mark? Any sort of decision factors, or is it about trying not to get sort of swept into the hype, or refocusing on their prior averages, or how do you manage that?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. If I had a really clear answer to that, I probably would have sold Supercoach by now and I'd be better at trading. no, really though, like that's kind of like I wish that I understood that process a little bit better than I do. And even to the point of balancing, like, one, you really need to own your decisions and back your own judgment, but also there's normally a lot of wisdom in the crowd. And so balancing those two things and getting the right decision in the end that you're really comfortable with and that works is, I find that to be one of the most fascinating parts of the game. And it's the thing that keeps me coming back to the game because I just don't have it mastered yet. How about you? You got any tips for me, mate?
It's hard to give advice because the advice I'm asking for is what helps set good coaches apart. And it's a whole host of factors that go into decision-making that influence that and not just one golden bullet. What I would say is treat advice probably now more than ever with a bit more of a healthy dose of skepticism. This is a great time for you to take a position and just own that position and go for it. Normally, wisdom of the crowd is something that is very easily to rely on. But this year, I don't think that the crowd is going to be necessarily correct anyway. So especially at an individual level, you know, even listening to this podcast, if I tell you John Segler is going to be great and you think I'm an absolute nuffy, you just had one good game, you bring him in and then Segler regresses to the mean, you went, oh, that wasn't because of reduced time or whatever. Segler's had one good game. You know what I mean? Like, I think this is the year where people are looking at patterns, making assumptions, and we're trying our best to present that advice to you. But if that doesn't make sense to you, don't listen to it, because it isn't necessarily going to be correct. So this is a good year to back your own judgment, take a bit of a position and have a bit of a crack. Because even if we all have our best shots and it's correct in this day, and with hindsight, we agree with that, that's not to say coronavirus won't get worse and we're going to have another period of downtime where the game gets paused again, and it doesn't matter how good you're planning for right now, it goes out the window. So play the game with a little bit more abandon in terms of doing what you like to do, and take a little bit more risk. Probably the only mistake you can make is not making enough moves. I think if you're only making two trades this week, it sounds like it could be a mistake. Just working out how many trades you'll have left if you max trade from now until the end, it's still probably too many trades to be left with if you're leaving three in the bank this week. So it's just something to think about in terms of being more aggressive and being okay to do that. I know we've got some quite conservative coaches out there. When I get on the podcast with Dummy, for example, I'll make sure Dummy is a bit more aggressive. I'll push him for that. That'd be my only tip, I reckon, Mark.
It's a good one, mate. I think that it's something that we've really tried to push over the longer term, which is, if you disagree with us, then make a different decision and back your judgment. And we're just trying to give you the tools to make a good decision rather than make decisions for you.
Awesome. Well, I've loved actually talking to you after some time off, Mark. So thank you very much for making the time. I hope you and your family have been keeping well through this all. And I'm looking forward to plenty more Supercoach chat as things hopefully return a bit more to normal. To our listeners, thank you very much for joining us again. Apologies we didn't come back to your ears sooner. As with many of you, I'm guessing that it got quite overwhelming and we're just sort of dealing with the punches as they came, and so the podcast just got pushed out a little bit. But we have every intention of trying our best to give you some good advice now that we've got the parameters back at play. And so thanks for joining back on. Thanks to our patrons as well. We've suspended payment for June, so you won't see anything come out for your subscription until July. So this next month, if you're feeling like joining us and supporting us, sign up to do so, and we'll seek to put more content out to say thank you to our patrons as well moving forward. I'm going to try and get Dani and Bryce back on for another show before the end of this lockout, and we'll try our best to get Mark on for one more episode as well. So yeah, that's probably it for me for now, and we'll sign off again until next week. See ya.
See ya, man.